from Jakarta, Indonesia. Here is Voice of Indonesia with English program. Presenting news, information, and entertainment from Indonesia. You can listen to our program through shortwave 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz. Online streaming, voanews.id, and RRI Digital Mobile Application. Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world. From Listener, here is highlight of the week, presenting you what is happening in Indonesia this week with me, Steve. You can listen to this broadcast on voanews.id, RRI Digital Mobile App, and the shortwave frequencies 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz. Listener, here is the top stories. Indonesia open to diplomatic ties with Israel if recognizes Palestine. Indonesian government sets Eid al-Adha for the 6th of June. And here is highlight of the week. Indonesia open to diplomatic ties with Israel if Israel recognizes Palestine. Full report by Andi Romdoni.
President Prabowo Subianto says Indonesia is ready to establish diplomatic relations with Israel, but only if it first recognizes an independent Palestinian state. Speaking after a bilateral meeting with French President Emmanuel Macron in Jakarta on Wednesday, Prabowo reaffirmed Indonesia's long-standing support for the two-state solutions as the only viable path to peace.
Sudah di berbagai tempat, di berbagai fora, saya sampaikan sikap Indonesia bahwa Indonesia.
In various forums, I have consistently stated that Indonesia sees the two-state solution, Palestinian independence, as the only way to achieve real peace. At the same time, we must acknowledge Israel's right to exist as a sovereign state with its security guaranteed. Once Israel recognizes Palestine, Indonesia is prepared to recognize Israel and open diplomatic ties. President Prabowo said France and Saudi Arabia plan a summit to advance the two-state solution for Palestine.
Salah satu hal yang sangat penting dalam pembahasan saya dengan Presiden Macron adalah apa yang disampaikan.
One key point in my discussion with President Macron was France's push for a peaceful resolution to the conflict. France will continue to support Palestinian independence, call for a ceasefire in Gaza, and demand full humanitarian access. We also back the upcoming summit led by France and Saudi Arabia to help achieve peace in the region. President Prabowo also said Indonesia is willing to send peacekeepers to the Middle East, including Palestine, as part of its ongoing commitment to humanitarian principles and international peace. Andi Ramdoni, Voice of Indonesia.
Indonesian government sets Eid al-Adha for 6th of June 2025. Full report by Andi Ramdoni.
The Indonesian government has officially set Eid al-Adha for Friday, 6 June 2025. The announcement came after the Ministry of Religious Affairs confirmed that first Zulhijjah 1446 Hijriah will begin on Wednesday, 28 May 2025. Religious Affairs Minister Nasaruddin Umar made the announcement in Jakarta following an isbat session on Tuesday evening. He said the decision was based on moon sighting reports from across the country.
Dan dengan demikian, maka kita bisa menyimpulkan bahwa awal Zulhijjah 1446 Hijriah ini setelah menerima laporan dari.
After reviewing reports from moon sighting observers across Indonesia, we have determined that first Zulhijjah begins on Wednesday, 28 May 2025. Therefore, Eid al-Adha will be observed on Friday, 6 June 2025. We hope this decision allows all Muslims in Indonesia to celebrate Idul Adha together in unity. According to the ministry, the new moon was successfully observed by a team in Aceh. The crescent was sighted at just over 3 degrees in altitude with an elongation of more than 7 degrees, meeting the visibility criteria set by Brunei Darussalam, Indonesia, Malaysia, and Singapore under the MABIMS framework. The announcement was also welcomed by members of Indonesia's parliament, Abdul Wahid, Deputy Chairman of House Commission 8, praised the session for balancing religious values with science.
Sidang isbat ini adalah contoh kesungguhan.
The session reflects the Ministry of Religious Affairs' dedication to upholding religious traditions while embracing science and technology, particularly astronomy, in line with Islamic teachings. Idul Adha, also known as the Feast of Sacrifice, is one of the most important dates on Islamic calendar. It commemorates the willingness of Prophet Ibrahim to sacrifice his son as an act of obedience to God. Andi Ramdhani, Voice of Indonesia.
Prabowo and Macron discussed stronger Indonesia-France strategic partnership, detailed by Desi Anugranov.
Indonesian President Prabowo Subianto welcomed France President Emmanuel Macron to Jakarta on Wednesday, May 28, during an official state visit. The meeting took place at the State Palace and marked 75 years of diplomatic relations between the two nations. President Prabowo noted that the partnership between Indonesia and France is built on shared values, including mutual respect, sovereignty, democracy, and human rights.
Di tengah kemitraan kita yang terus berkembang,
as our partnership continues to grow, there is still much potential we can explore and new opportunities we need to make use of. I welcome today's meeting, especially as the current global geopolitical and geoeconomic landscape is filled with uncertainty. France and Indonesia can make a strong contribution to geopolitical and geoeconomic stability.
The leader discussed strengthening cooperation in key sectors such as defense, energy, transportation, and critical minerals. President Macron emphasized the strategic role of the Indo-Pacific region and reaffirmed French commitment to deeper engagement with Indonesia. He also highlighted culture as a vital part of the bilateral relationship, with a new cultural agreement expected to be signed at Borobudur. Initiative, he said, reflects the deepening friendship between the two countries. Desi Anugranov for Voice of Indonesia.
Indonesia launches Tamasha Childcare program for working parents, detailed by Ofra.
Indonesia has introduced a new child care initiative to support working parents in industrial and plantation areas. The program called Tamasha was officially launched by Minister of Population and Family Development and Head of the National Population and Family Planning Board, Wihaji, on Tuesday in Kutai East, Kalimantan. Tamasha is designed as an integrated child care service providing a safe and nurturing environment for children while their parents are at work.
There are 91 Tamasha child care centers within corporate areas serving around 1,800 children, said Wihaji. Why do we do this? Because children have the right to a future. This allows mothers to work while their children still receive attention, love, and emotional support. Everything can move forward together.
The program focuses on training for child care providers, regular monitoring of children's growth and development, parenting support for families, and referral services for those in need of health care or protections. Wihaji added that Tamasha will be expanded nationwide, reflecting the government's commitment to improving family welfare while supporting economic productivity. Ofarina, Voice of Indonesia.
Indonesia highlights the role of biodiversity in climate action. Full detail by Desi Anugranov.
Indonesia is stepping up effort to protect biodiversity as part of its climate change strategy. The government says a rich variety of plants and animals is vital to keeping ecosystem balance and resilience. Speaking in Jakarta on Wednesday, Speaking in Jakarta on Wednesday, Director of Research Mobilization for Climate Change Control at the Ministry of Environment, Frankie Zamzani, emphasized the strong link between climate and biodiversity.
Climate change has a big impact on biodiversity, but a diverse ecosystem can also help slow climate change. That's why we need to take action together by cutting emissions and making responsible choices. It's not just about protecting nature, but also about making sure future generations can live well.
As part of this effort, the government is working with the National Weather Agency, BMKG, to improve early warning system so communities can better prepare for the response to climate risk. Frankie also called for cooperation across sector and full community involvement. He said everyone, from children to the elderly, has a role to play in safeguarding life for the future.
Indonesian President Prabowo Subianto met with French President Emmanuel Macron on Wednesday at the State Palace in Jakarta. During the meeting, President Prabowo said France is one of Indonesia's key partners in the defense sector. He also invited President Macron to visit Indonesian Military Academy in Magelang as a symbol of military training cooperation. We already have a defense cooperation agreement between Indonesia and France. France is one of Indonesia's main partners in modernizing defense equipment, including developing the defense industry through joint production and technology transfer. We will continue our defense cooperation, including improving our human resource capacity. In the economic field, we agreed to promote more balanced trade and investment relations.
Peningkatan kapasitas sumber daya manusia kita. Di bidang ekonomi, kami sepakat mendorong hubungan dagang dan investasi yang lebih seimbang.
President Prabowo stated that in the economic sector, Indonesia is pushing for the speedy conclusion of Indonesia-EU Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement and supports Indonesia's bid to join the Organization for the Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD, which headquarters is in Paris, France. Meanwhile, in the areas of energy, maritime affairs and education and transportation, cooperation will also be strengthened, including increasing the number of Indonesian students in France. The bilateral meeting confirmed a new direction for Indonesia-France relations, one that is stronger, more balanced and future-oriented, while upholding democracy, human rights and global peace. Indonesia and France have agreed to strengthen cooperation in various fields, marked by the signing of 12 agreements, including a Memorandum of Understanding or MOU document in the creative economy sector. The MOU was signed by Indonesian Minister of Creative Economy, Teuku Rifki Harsha, and the French Minister of Culture, Rachida Dati, before President Prabowo and President Macron at the State Palace, Jakarta, Wednesday. Teuku Rifki, in his press statement of the war, explained that the cooperation in the creative economy sector of the two countries includes the subsectors of games, films, design, fashion, and crafts.
Adapun skop kerjasama antara pemerintah Indonesia dan pemerintah Prancis.
Games are included there. So there are five subsectors that we are collaborating on, and this is one of the 12 Memorandum of Understandings, if I'm not mistaken. 12 Memorandum of Understandings signed today.
Games termasuk di situ. Jadi itu subsektor, ada 5 subsektor yang kita kerjasamakan, dan ini adalah salah satu dari 12 MOU, kalau tidak salah ya. 12 MOU yang hari ini ditandatangani.
The Minister of Creative Economy also added that concrete steps for this cooperation include strengthening human resources for the creative economy, including workshops, exchanges of creative economy activists or residency, and co-production. Meanwhile, as an effort to expand market access, it was agreed to facilitate the participation of creative economy activists in various events in both countries. And you're still listening to Highlight of the Week by Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. President Prabowo accompanies Macron to Borobudur Temple. Full report by Dora Pardede.
Indonesian President Prabowo Subianto accompanied France President Emmanuel Macron on an official visit to Borobudur Temple on Thursday. The temple is a UNESCO World Heritage Site and one of Indonesia's most iconic landmarks. President Prabowo said Indonesia and France are great nations with long histories and strong cultural roots. He added that both countries share the same values, their humanity, tolerance, and respect for diversity.
Kita ingin memelihara kehidupan.
We want to maintain a harmonious life, good peace. We believe that only through friendship, family, and collaboration, we all can have a better life.
Kita semua bisa mendapat kehidupan yang lebih baik.
President Prabowo added that he is confident the partnership between Indonesia and France will continue to grow. He hopes the relationship will build bridges between cultural figures, artists, creative industries, and community leaders from both nations. Dora Pardede for Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the World.
Still related to Macron's visit to Borobudur Temple, Indonesia's culture minister says stairlift at Borobudur Temple will become permanent. Full report by Ofra Regina.
Indonesia's culture minister Fadlizon says the government plans to install a permanent stairlift at Borobudur Temple. He spoke after accompanying France President Emmanuel Macron and Indonesian President Prabowo Subianto during their visit on Thursday. The stairlift is currently portable and does not damage the stone structure of the temple.
There's no problem. We will make it permanent in future. This is about inclusivity. All World Heritage sites have similar facilities. We've planned this for some time. The current lift is portable and causes no damage. Not a single bolt harms the stone.
Minister Fadli added that the permanent version will use technology that protects Indonesia's cultural heritage. Of Regina, Voice of Indonesia.
The Emerald Hajj 2025 heads to Saudi Arabia to oversee Indonesian Hajj services. Report by Dora Pardede.
Indonesia's Amirul Hajj for the 1446 Hijri or 2025 Hajj season officially left for Saudi Arabia on Thursday. The news was shared by Minister of Religious Affairs Nasaruddin Umar during a press conference in Jakarta on Thursday. He said the mission is part of a state duty given by President Haji Prabowo.
Dengan menjalankan tugas negara.
This is a state duty entrusted by President Prabowo to ensure that our Hajj pilgrims receive the best possible service.
Yang baik.
By law, the Amirul Hajj leads the National Hajj Mission and handles Hajj-related diplomacy during the season. Nasaruddin Umar also mentioned that the Amirul Hajj will meet with Saudi official to explore ways to improve Hajj services in the future. As of day 29 of Hajj operation, over 189,000 Indonesian pilgrims have arrived in Saudi Arabia in more than 480 groups. Around 55% are women and 45% are men. Dora Pardede for Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the World.
And listener, that's highlight of the week.
future without kids, and it's chronic, toxic, honest. Don't wanna read the news, but what am I supposed to do?
Of Indonesia, the overseas service of Radio Republic Indonesia, broadcast in 9 language services: English, French, German, Dutch, Spanish, Arabic, Mandarin, Japanese, and Indonesian. Voice of Indonesia is broadcast via shortwave 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz, and via streaming on voanews.id and RRI Digital on mobile application. We present various programs for you: Diplomatic Forum, The Session, Indonesian Wonder, Miscellany, Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia, Indonesian Pop and Regional Songs, International Musical Entertainment, as well as news and information about Indonesia and abroad. Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Away. I don't need to move when you're in my way. I don't need to see what we heard today. I don't wanna stay out late just to hold you. I don't wanna do what we used to do. Oh, I don't care. Trying, I don't even care just to act. 'Cause baby, don't you know that we're dying? I'm sad and it's over, but I don't care.
don't need to be your everything. I don't need to be your sweetest thing. Baby, we were lost when it threw my head. Baby, I just don't wanna understand. I don't wanna stay out late just to hold you. I don't wanna do what we used to do. Oh, I don't care. I don't even know why we're trying. I don't even care just to ask. 'Cause baby, don't you know that we're dying? I'm sad and it's over, but I don't care. When it's over and I am free, when it's done for you and me, and I know you know that I don't want this for you and me. Oh, and I don't even know why we're trying. I don't even care just to ask. 'Cause baby, don't you know that we're dying? I am sad and it's over. And I don't even know why we're trying. I don't even care just to ask. 'Cause baby, don't you know that we are dying? I am sad and it's over, but I don't care. I don't care. I don't care.
And listener, here is the VOA talk about story from Gaza with Al Jazeera journalist in Gaza, Yumna El Sayed.
Voice of Indonesia.
Welcome to special interview on Voice of Indonesia. I'm Daniel. It's an honor to welcome our special guest, Yumna El Sayed, a respected Al Jazeera journalist who has fearlessly reported from Gaza. In the midst of danger and escalating crisis, she brings forward voices and stories the world needs and should listen to. Thank you, Yumna. Thank you for coming and being with us today.
Thank you so much, Daniel, for hosting me. It's truly a pleasure to be here among you guys in Indonesia and in Radio Republic of Indonesia.
Well, let's start with what you are seeing on the ground right now. How would you describe the situation in Gaza after 2 years of the ongoing Israeli aggression and its indiscriminate attack?
Well, since day one, honestly, Daniel, since this genocide started unfolding, the situation in Gaza has been deteriorating day after day. Let's not forget that prior to the 7th of October, Gaza has already been living under a lasting Israeli siege for the past 18 years, which means that Gaza is not a place for supplies and goods and products that are found everywhere in the markets, for example. We did not have electricity like other places around the world. We did not have enough fuel. At best case scenarios, it was 8 hours of electricity, which meant that hospitals were depending on generators, on fuels. We had only one sole company of electricity that was barely running, you know, and Israel had refused for many years to allow the Palestinians in Gaza to have a real, you know, a supplier of electricity in Gaza. It means that Gaza is not a place that had water that is always running. The health sector in Gaza was always on the verge of collapse. Mm-hmm. in any kind of emergency that had happened or would happen instantly, that verge of collapse instantly collapsed. At the beginning of the genocide, I remember I was asking one of the head of the emergency section in Al-Shifa Hospital, and I said, how much is the capacity of beds around, across the strip in the hospitals? You know how many he told me?
How many?
1,800 medical beds across the strip. The strip is a home for 2.3 million people. We're talking about 1,800 medical beds. That's less than 2,000 beds. Can you imagine? This is basically the reality of Gaza before any kind of war or escalation. But this same, and this is a situation, by the way, that international organizations are aware of. They know that this is the reality of the situation in Gaza. The international community understands very much the reality of the situation in Gaza. And they know that this, all these measures, precautions, denials, are because of an illegal Israeli occupation and siege on the Gaza Strip. For almost 2 years now, the people in Gaza are being bombed indiscriminately, day and night, relentlessly. Forced evacuations, forced displacement. Children are dying of starvation while the entire world is watching.
Yeah.
Children, women, men, elderly are dying of thirst. They go through the process of being tortured by your veins drying because of your thirst. That all this is being allowed while the entire world is watching. It's being documented while the international community is allowing it to happen.
And you saw those realities by yourself on the ground.
I lived this reality. I lived this reality, Daniel, with my children. I lived this reality with my neighbors, with the people around me. I've seen it. I've lived it. I know how much the amount of suffering and torment that these people live on a daily basis, not just on a daily basis, every hour of every day.
Yumna, the footage of the missiles striking the building just behind you while you were reporting from Gaza left everybody in shock. And I personally admire your courage to continuing the reporting in such horrifying and terrible situations. So could you share with us about that horrible experience and what gave you the courage to carry on in such a dangerous situation?
It's very ironic because this happened in the 7th of October, 2023, but in May, 2021, a similar, video and a similar situation happened to me also while I was on air. Only this time the tower that was hit was right in front of me. So the audience and the camera was not capturing the targeting of the tower. It was capturing my reaction. And this I'm just giving you an example of something that happened in 2021 and it happened again in 2023. This is just really the reality of
kind of deja vu.
The coverage that or the kind of work that we live as Palestinian journalists in the field.
Yes.
I was just by coincidence that it happened while I was live on air and the entire world had seen it. It has happened with a lot of other, maybe not the same situation exactly, but many other situations like this situation or similar to this situation have happened with so many other colleagues and the cameras, because they were not live, did not capture that situation. It has happened with me in so many other situations that were much worse than this one. I actually felt after I've been subjected to other situations of live bombardment, that this one was actually the lightest of them all.
And there's still injury on his shoulder, right?
There is. It was actually the shrapnel flying. I did not get an injury from that day. No, the injury I have in my back is because of my my very heavy vest and helmet. And another situation that happened in Jabalia refugee camp when a massacre. I went to cover a massacre in Jabalia refugee camp. And suddenly the Israeli army called to say that it was going to hit again the same place that was struck. And it was a total chaos and everyone started running for their life. And they actually hit before people had moved out of the place. And I was one of these people as well. So it's just a lot of situations that you can't really take your breath in the field when you're covering a war or a genocide in Gaza. And this one has been completely different. Everyone used to ask me at the beginning, why is this one different than other wars? And I used to think, because of course this one is so much more fearful. This one has no rules. Journalists were declared as legitimate targets. No, it's every single Palestinian in Gaza was declared as a legitimate target. But then I realized all the previous ones, Daniel, were wars. This one is a genocide. It's a genocide from the very first beginning.
Second day, right?
From the very first day. Tower that was captured on live on camera, it's a 14-story building residential tower right in the middle of Gaza City. And maybe what kept me going is that Gaza is a very small place. We know the names of the buildings, the areas, the streets, everything. So it was easy to look and to identify right away the residential tower that was hit. Of course, I was in a state of panic. I was in a state of terror. I'm at the end, I'm a human being. I can't neglect the, really, it's just like the normal human reaction that you can't control as a human being.
So what gave you the courage to carry on? You're still reporting under that dangerous situation. And in your opinion, I mean, from your perspective, what brings about the courage and what makes Palestinian journalists also brave? Yeah.
Well, I feel that we carry on not just as a professional duty. We carry on because of the ethical and moral duty and responsibility that we carry on our shoulders as Palestinian journalists covering a genocide that is unfolding against our own people. I always said that the journalist is not the story, and we know that as journalists. We always say that it's not the journalist behind the story that matters. But in this case, every single journalist was living the same story. He and she were living the story of their homes being bombed, their families being threatened, their neighborhoods being destroyed, their streets, their schools, their everything, their entire lives. So it's not that we have been excluded. No, it got to the point where we are being targeted, and so are our family, for being journalists. And this is where all lines have been crossed. We have been put in a total different category, treated as criminals, and that we must be targeted for our coverage, for being the window of the world on the atrocities and crimes committed by the Israeli army towards innocent civilians.
Even though they are protected by law, right? even though they're protected by...
Every single, exactly, every single civilian is protected under international law, and journalists are civilians that are identified. They risk their lives to go to places of danger to report, to become the window, the messenger of truth for the rest of the world. And this should give them a sense of protection and appreciation for risking their lives and not just staying home at such dangerous times.
Yeah. Yumna, allow me to briefly take a step back into the past. What first brought you to be a war journalist in Gaza?
Well, so I became a journalist at first. Being a war journalist was actually imposed on me because this is just the reality and the case for every journalist in Gaza. Journalism has always been a passion for me. It was not part of my academic background or education. It was a dream and a passion that I really wanted to pursue one day. Gaza, after I moved there to settle completely in 2014, was a place for me that I realized that the world doesn't know anything about. It's an impoverished territory under lasting Israeli occupation, going through dozens of escalations, military escalations, and wars year after year. It was nobody knew anything or heard anything about Gaza except at these very difficult times and tough times. But nobody knew anything about the beautiful faces of Gaza, the people of Gaza, the culture of Gaza. And I thought that this is where I can really start pursuing my dream and taking that step that I've always wanted and postponed it. And that's when I started learning how to become a journalist. And I think each and every journalist we all have the general standards and principles of journalism. The code of ethics that we hear about, that we read about. But each and every journalist is distinguished by their own principles, standards, and not experience and capabilities, because that differs from journalist to another, of course. And of course, it distinguishes journalists. But I think that the integrity, the standards, and the principles are the most important that distinguish true journalists today.
Yeah, Yumna, being a war journalist, putting life at risk, so line of works, yeah, can be tough on your family. How did your father, your mother, or family react when you decided to become a war journalist, or to become a journalist in a very conflict zone, so the most dangerous area maybe on the globe?
Well, it was not easy, and it's still not easy until now. And the fact that they always feel that I'm not safe out there in the field, even when I used to go to cover the marches and the protests by the borders, we as journalists used to get targeted by the Israeli army deployed on the other side of the security fence, although we are hundreds of meters away from it. And this has always been a sense of worry, and just not just among my family, but among my family, my friends, everyone who knows me. But at the same time, it's an important duty in a place like Gaza, Daniel, because I report in English.
Yes.
And I report for a special kind of audience. I report for the international audience, for the Western audience. Western. That, for me as Yumna, I need those audiences away from the Middle East, on the other parts of the world, to realize what is happening in Gaza, to realize the injustice that we are living, especially that we live in a time where the Israeli propaganda is very strong and very influential. Yes. And as a journalist, I don't see a reason for you not to go by yourself to the place, to the territory, and investigate and witness firsthand. Because a part of a journalist's definition is not just a messenger, but a witness, a firsthand witness. Many journalists can, with many nationalities, they can go to the occupied territories, they can go to occupied East Jerusalem, they can even access the Gaza Strip and come. Of course, not during this genocide, but before. And they can go and see and witness for themselves.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But we're talking about long years, decades. Of oppression, suppression, illegal occupation, lasting blockade. You can't have all these injustices unfold year after another towards a population and be completely silent and quiet about, and then wake up and realize that, oh, there's the 7th of October attack and the entire world is talking about it.
Yeah.
And the decades of suffering and oppression and repression and siege and slaughter against an entire population in the occupied Palestinian territories, in East Jerusalem, and in the Gaza Strip, all are summarized in one attack called the October 7th attack. The October 7th attack is an attack. It happened. You cannot have double standards and say, oh, I do not sympathize with what happened. No, that is just having the same double standards that I condemn and denounce. A victim is a victim everywhere, no matter. On this side of the border or that side of the border. A civilian is a civilian, no matter their nationality, Palestinians and Israelis. But you can't unsee and ignore and turn a blind eye and a deaf ear towards all these injustices unfolding for decades against the Palestinian people, and then come and focus on one attack by the Palestinian groups or a certain group, okay?
Yes.
And then watch an entire genocide unfold against innocent civilians, collective punishment by all means, and stay silent and quiet about how is that justified?
Yes.
It is not justified.
Not justified at all. Yeah. Yumna, covering war means witnessing human suffering. So maybe many of your journalists wonder, how do you manage yourself, your psychological well-being, to do your job under such extreme condition?
Well, I have a very horrible psychological well-being. And I don't think...
Because many journalists, of course, Indonesian journalists wonder, how can you be that strong? So how you manage your psychological well-being?
Well, to be honest with you, I find ways to survive, but I don't have a well mental condition since I came out of Gaza. For example, I have sleep deprivation for over a year now. And makeup and concealers, you would constantly be seeing very dark circles around my eyes. And this is something that I can't control, because no matter how much I try to go to sleep, I can't sleep.
So how many hours do you sleep
every night? I try to, if I can get 2 or 3 hours of sleep, I'm very happy, I'm very grateful.
Yeah.
I sleep when I completely fall asleep alone, because I can't take it anymore. The well-being of a person who has witnessed such scenes, pictures, events, not just with people around me in Gaza, but even among my children, as a mother.
Your daughter.
Is not something that I think I can ever recover from.
Yeah.
And maybe there was hope that I would have recovered if the genocide would have stopped long ago, and we would have seen some better, you know, better days unfolding for thousands of children. I think about those children who are only survivors, those children who are starving, those children who are thirsty, those children who are suffering in hospitals of third-degree burns or amputees, and there is no painkiller to keep them safe, to keep them off the pain. I've seen them. I've seen the mothers in the displaced tents, and then the children in remote areas in very thin tents, in the winter cold, and in the very hot, sunny summer. I've seen the long queues and lines of bread and water, and worse than that, the fear and terror among the children when they hear a missile fall. Mm. The stories of children, the emotions, it's endless, Daniel. It's endless.
So heartbreaking. Yumna, you once mentioned in one of the interview that sharing Gaza's voice globally from one country to another country helps you ease a deep sense of sorrow upon witnessing the pain of colleagues and loved ones. So do you feel the same here in Indonesia? And could you tell us the main mission of your coming to Indonesia?
Well, of course. I mean, this is something that I can, the least, let's say, I can do to contribute to Gaza, to its people, to my colleagues, to stand by them. I left Gaza and I left with a great sense of survival guilt. I left because I had no choice, no other choice to save my children's life except by leaving. And that survival guilt for the first 4 months killed me, literally, every single day. I felt like it was eating me alive. And then I decided and realized that I can still contribute to the raising of awareness around the world by going to these countries around the world and speaking about Gaza, about the suffering, the challenges of the people, the innocent civilians, the dangers among my colleagues, the journalists, the targeting of journalists, the mental health of journalists, children, women, all these sufferings and difficulties open the eyes of the people. And I really believe in the power of the people, because majority always overcomes minority, no matter how much minority is stronger. And the governments will, at the end, listen to the voices of their people, because their people are the majority. So no matter how weak their voices were, they are so much greater. And once they realize that their voices matter, this is when a real change can happen. And this is what I call out for.
The word that you choose is wonderful, yeah? Survival guilty. I hope entire Muslims in the world feel the same, yeah? Survival guilty, by voicing up, by standing with Palestinians. Yumna, finally, with everything you have witnessed, what keeps you going? What keeps you telling these stories to the world?
I still have hope that the people will, their voices will be greater than any challenges, than any obstacles. And this is how we will be able to overcome any obstacles in front of us. I know that there is a change that is happening. It's happening slowly, but it's actually happening. And slow, concrete change is better than rapid and lasting change. And the other thing is, I always remind myself of the ongoing suffering among the people. And that suffering, Daniel, as much as it hurts and breaks my heart and tears my soul, as much as it keeps me and fuels me and motivates me to go on and not give up. So I will keep going on, because it's not just the end of this genocide. It's the aftermath. But what matters now is that it would stop once and for all, and then we start dealing with the aftermath that will take decades long to for the people and for the land to recover.
Thank you, Yumna. Thank you for sharing with us your inspiring story and your incredible bravery with us today.
Thank
your
you,
voice serves as a powerful call for the entire world to stand with Gaza. And we hope peace can soon be restored in Gaza as well.
Thank you so much, Daniel. Thank you for having me.
Dear viewers and listeners, that was our conversation with Yumna El Sayed. And thank you for watching.
Voice of Indonesia. RRA Digital with New Look. Various collaborative content from various national programs, including live visual broadcasts, live radio broadcasts, music playlists, podcasts, video news, and various users' interaction features in the game. Various interesting content such as likes, comments, and shares, as well as live chat with broadcasters and users. Direct messaging and private chat facilities between app users are also available. RRI Digital. Available on Google Store and App Store. RRI Digital.
You might be familiar with this sound when your kids are online. But you might miss some other sounds. Your child might stumble upon harmful content, bullies, and predators when they are online. Pay attention to the sounds. It's not too late.
Mom, what's this?
Find more ways to protect children online from your local children protection agency or visit unicef.org.
Thank you for listening to our broadcast. Please leave some comments and questions to voilisteners@gmail.com, the comment section of RRI Digital Mobile App, and our social media accounts, Facebook, The Voice of Indonesia, Instagram, TikTok, VOI_official. You can listen again to the VOI Talk on our YouTube channel, VOI Official. And please save our WhatsApp number, +62 821 2381 2130. Once again, +62 821 2381 2130. Well then, I'm Steve. Thank you very much for listening. Make sure to stay tuned with us, Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.